This is Bulldog Live on the Pulse. To get in touch about the news of the day, call 866-823-1077. Now, here's Brian Tilton and Bulldog Live.
It started as a rally against gun violence, but it attracted a very strong pro-Second Amendment crowd. Among that crowd was Daniel Musso, who is now facing multiple criminal charges, including simple assault against a police officer.
The names I delivered were the names of young people like my daughter, Melissa. Sir, please have a little respect.
I am respectful.
Thank you.
But if you had this speech in your mind, you wouldn't have to read all this propaganda from you.
The confrontation started at the podium when Brentwood's Daniel Musso interrupted a speech by John Canton of Manchester. Canton, who was wounded and lost his daughter in a shooting in 2009, was speaking in favor of expanded background checks on gun sales. After numerous interjections, Musso decided to walk away. But Concord police had already been summoned. When they started speaking with him, he initiated physical contact, triggering this. Officers struggled to subdue Musso for about a minute and a half before tasing him.
Well, certainly a circus show on the front steps of the Capitol building yesterday. Actually out by the street on the sidewalk there, but oh my goodness, it was huge. It was great. It was actually downright hilarious at points. With that story accepted, of course, good morning to you, Bulldog Brian Tilton here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse at 1-866-823-1077. WMUR News providing, well, I'll tell you about it. Yes, Bulldog Live was there. Oh, man. So yesterday, you know, from 5 to 7, the Bloomberg's folks coming in with their bus, you know, out of town telling New Hampshire what kind of laws we should have and, you know, just trying to cause trouble with our rights. And, you know, a bunch of us, you know, responsible gun owners showed up in about 10 times the numbers, it seemed. And it was quite interesting. And like I said, it was almost a circus atmosphere, really. And, you know, a lot of people getting their shouts in edgewise. And, yeah, WMUR did a 3-minute story on it last night. And they spent 2.5 minutes talking about that nitwit who ended up assaulting a police officer. Now, I just want to tell you this, for any of you who were there and missed part of that, or for those who were watching the story, I think WMUR actually had the better of the coverage of anybody out there, because I was on the front row of that confrontation, and Adam Sexton was actually standing right nearby when it happened, so he got to see exactly what I got to see. And basically what happened is, yeah, that idiot went up to the podium to try to interrupt John Canton of Manchester. That was the wrong thing to do. You don't do that. You know, they're there. That's their moment. Let them speak. If you want to, you know, challenge them from the back of the crowd, fine. Go ahead, like many other people were doing. But police did catch up to the guy later, and they started talking to him. He says, and I heard him say, "I'm not going to say anything if you don't keep my mouth shut." And he proceeded to swear at the police officers. Okay, I'm thinking, okay, just shut up, just shut up, just shut up, and they'll deal with you, just shut up. Well, he wouldn't shut up. And then both his hands went right on one of the police officers between his chest and his shoulder. I said, that's it, this is not going to end well. Well, that's when they tried to handcuff him. He was resisting, physically resisting, and then they were trying to get him to comply. He wasn't going to comply. He was standing there with a big smirk on his face. And three officers tried to get him down. Then four officers came in. And then five. And then more. And one of the officers had a taser pointed right at him with a very clear warning. You know, don't make me do it. Well, he made him do it. So, boom. There goes the taser. Heard a big pop. And then down he went. And, you know, there was just a quick jolt, and that was pretty much it. And that was just enough to get him in the handcuffs. And then they quickly whisked him away. I got to say, you know, there were people there yelling, "Oh, leave him alone, leave him alone." No. Concord police acted very appropriately. They used just about the right amount of force that was necessary and dealing with that guy. So I find no fault in the Concord PD. In fact, they pretty much left everybody else alone and let everybody do their thing at their rally and counter rally. So, but of course, that was the headlines. The bigger headline really should be, and this is why I'm glad I was there, because I get to tell you these things outside of a two-minute news clip. Basically, a lot of people showed up to counter-protest, and it was huge. It was really huge. A lot of people holding signs and, you know, getting their digs in edgewise. You know, how many people died in New York City today? And the one big thing that was hilarious was when one of the Bloomberg speakers were saying, "Oh, we got 280 million guns in this country." Well, almost everybody erupted in applause. And they were cheering loudly. And everybody started shouting, "More guns! More guns!" It was great. It was, let's put it this way. I think it'll be a very long time before Bloomberg sends his bus back to New Hampshire. I think so. I really do. They started off in Newtown, Connecticut earlier in the day. And one report that I was reading is that they did so without telling anybody. And then when a couple of pro-gun supporters showed up, they were harassed by the police there in Connecticut. And, you know, they were committing no crimes, did nothing wrong, and police did not arrest or charge anybody. But, you know, the Bloomberg folks just were not happy that somebody was there protecting their gun rights. So in this case, yesterday, they weren't able to pull those kinds of shenanigans because there was way many more of us than there was of them. And, you know, there was this one lady. This was great. She was obviously not happy with the hecklers and the people chanting their points on our side. And she came up to me and she goes, "Now, do you really think that this is appropriate? I mean, you have your Second Amendment rights. Why can't we have our First Amendment rights?" And I looked right at her. I said, "Hon," I said, "first of all, you're trying to take away my Second Amendment rights, and I will resist you every step of the way. Secondly, he has his First Amendment rights. He's exercising them right now, and so are we. The problem is you want to determine who gets what rights." And then at that point, she walked away, and then she started jumping in on one of the legislators, one of the Republican legislators that was in attendance. And she said, "Oh, you think this is funny, don't you?" Because he was laughing at what I had to say. Oh, my. Oh, my. It was good. So message was sent very loud and clear. Do not screw around with New Hampshire gun owners. That was it. So there you go. 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number right here on Bulldog Live. So a lot of people, basically, people from all walks of life were there. And that was not a bad thing. It was not. Again, except for that one nitwit. But, of course, he'll get all the headlines. And that's why I'm glad I was there, because I could tell you what happened firsthand in that case, but also tell you what happened with the rest of the rally. I mean, it was only there for 45 minutes, if that. Because I did have an appointment that I had to be at in Boscawen at 6:15, so I left there just before 6. And by that time, things started to wane and go away. So, very good show by the people who are defending our rights here in New Hampshire. And let this be a lesson. This is what's coming, folks. This is what, when you attack our rights, whether it be our First Amendment rights, our Second Amendment rights, our Fifth Amendment rights, our Fourth Amendment rights, and so on, this is how people are going to react, because we've had enough of it. We absolutely have. And before I tell you more about the illegal alien amnesty bill and the trouble that we are in the United States Senate, we're going to take a phone call at 1-866-823-1077. And I'm a little late getting on the little chatting system here that J-Dog and I have, but let's go to Bill from Boscawen first here on Bulldog Live. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Good morning. Hey, I was just reading in the latest issue of the Washington Times And there's an advertisement in there that's talking about Michael Bloomberg and some of his associates.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that it points out is that a lot of these mayors and former mayors are actually convicted criminals. And there's a listing of 18 of them here. Perjury, embezzling, bribery, extortion, assault, racketeering, convicted of assault, blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely correct. Yep.
And unfortunately, the Washington Times isn't really as widely distributed as it should be.
Right.
So most people don't really understand that Bloomberg and some of his associates are basically criminals.
No, nobody talked about that in any of the news coverage about the mayors against illegal guns coming into New Hampshire with their bus to try and stir up the crowd. And they don't talk about the criminal activities of the people that are in that group. Shouldn't we have a group protect us against illegal mayors?
Yeah, really, absolutely. At the bottom of this advertisement, it says gun owners against illegal mayors, and this is a project of the Second Amendment Foundation. So my guess is if you go on their website, anybody could probably find out this same information or probably more.
No, you're absolutely right, Bill. I think it was the Second Amendment Foundation that started tracking this a few months ago. Yeah, no, it really is amazing. Assault and bribery and embezzlement, all these kinds of things. Yeah, absolutely. These are the supporters of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. My goodness, and then they're going to come here and lecture us about guns? I mean, 25 people killed in New York City in one day. That's almost twice of what's killed in New Hampshire every year, for crying out loud. And they're going to point at us? I don't think so.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Bill. You too. Bye-bye. 1-866-823-1077. Coming up on the program today, we'll talk with James O'Keefe. He's head of Project Veritas and the author of the new book, Breakthrough. He's a citizen journalist who has brought down Acorn, and now he's got a new thing going on. Oh, and he also exposed New Hampshire's voter problems here, which led to our voter ID law, and the retaliation he faced from the New Hampshire Department of Justice. And we'll talk about his confrontation with Associate Attorney General Richard Head very, very recently. Oh, and yesterday, James O'Keefe came out with a new blockbuster video series about those Obama phones and the fraud that the people selling those Obama phones are advocating. Go sell your Obama phone for drugs. That's okay. We won't tell anybody. But first, on the illegal alien amnesty bill, because this is the other full frontal assault that we're facing from Washington, D.C., and that is yesterday, again, people are asking me, will the real Marco Rubio stand up? But if you look into Marco Rubio's history on illegal immigration, he's never been an enforcement guy. He's never been a secure borders guy. He's got a very, very long history on that. So he's really true to his colors on this illegal alien amnesty bill. But yesterday, the Senate rejected building 700 miles of double-tier border fencing that Congress actually authorized just 7 years ago. And the majority of the Senate said they didn't want to delay granting illegal immigrants legal status while the fence was being built. So they promptly voted it down, 54-39. Now, folks, there's been a promise made by Congress several years ago, and it goes back to 1986 even, about securing the borders. They have not done that. This administration is not interested in enforcing any laws. This administration continues to promote lawlessness. And what makes you think that passing another law is going to make the administration follow that law? Do you really think that? It's kind of like criminals and gun rights. You know, you pass more gun control laws, what makes you think that the criminal's going to follow them, huh? Well, anyway, so that is what the Senate did yesterday in proving once again that this illegal alien amnesty bill is about amnesty first, border security second, but that still didn't stop Senator Kelly Ayotte from defending the amnesty bill by now trying to tell us the laughable line, and this is her quote. The CBO, this is the Congressional Budget Office analysis of the bill. She says the CBO's report affirms that the immigration bill is both fiscally responsible and pro-growth. significantly reducing the deficit over the next two decades and increasing economic growth and productivity. Really? Today's announcement is further evidence that we can and should reform our broken immigration system to meet our economic needs and address our serious fiscal challenges. Well, she says that the CBO is saying that this bill would reduce the deficit by $197 billion over the next 10 years by approximately $700 billion between 2024 and 2033. First of all, folks, no Congress is bound by any spending or deficit reduction provisions from the previous Congress. That's number one. Number two, we know that any time Congress comes up with a 5-year plan, 10-year plan, or in this case, a 30-year plan, you know it's not going to be followed. And it's going to reduce the deficit by $197 billion out of a $17 trillion debt. Oh, yeah, that's going to solve all our problems, isn't it? But as the Heritage Foundation points out today, because they went after the CBO report, and here's what they found in the CBO's analysis, that this will not stop illegal immigration. And they say that the bill would only slow future illegal immigration by only 25%. So in the next couple of decades, that means 7.5 million new illegal immigrants. The CBO also estimates that for legal American workers, the bill would drive down their average wages. Did Senator Ayotte put that in her statement? No, I share with you her entire statement. She said in her statement, where did I put it? Oh, I already threw it on the floor. Let me get it. She says, oh, there's further evidence that we can and should reform our broken immigration system to meet our economic needs. Our economic needs. Excuse me, Senator, before I pop my top here. And that is, are our economic needs to further drive down American wages? I mean, it's bad enough that a lot of people are working for less money today than they did 4 years ago. Or maybe they're making the same amount of money as 4 or 5 years ago. But guess what? The cost of living has gone up a lot since then. So they are working for less. This is our economic need. As the CBO itself points out, that the bill would drive down the average American wages. And let's talk about the burden on taxpayers as well. This is only a temporary delay in eligibility to welfare and entitlements. And over time, it makes all 18.5 million eligible for nearly every government program, including Obamacare, 80 different welfare programs, Social Security, and Medicare. And of course, when this occurs, what do you think's going to happen? Spending's going to explode, won't it? Wow. There you go. Well, this bill addresses America's economic needs. CBO says it's going to drive down American wages. Is Senator Kelly Ayotte really representing the interests of New Hampshire? Or is she only representing Senator John McCain, who wants to see the end of the Republican Party as you know it? And she's going to take political advice from Chuck Schumer? Come on. You know, the Republican Party, and I really got to move on here, but I'll just say this. They can be up 180,000 votes heading into an election. And in order to go after 8 votes, they compromise their positions. And then they end up losing the election. Now, this bill, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, has already said that this bill, the debate will end this Friday. It could even end Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, but it could end as early as this Friday. And as soon as they call for cloture on that, meaning no more amendments can be debated, not that it's going to matter anyway, because they're voting down every amendment relating to border security. 3 days later, will be a vote on this bill. 202-224-3121 is the phone number for the Capitol switchboard to get a hold of Senator Kelly Ayotte and Senator Jeanne Shaheen. Do you support lowering American wages, yes or no? If the answer is no, then say vote no on S744. Bulldog Live continues on the Pulse.
Last year, the New Hampshire Department of Justice sent some officials to the house of one of my colleagues, and basically what amounted to a raid. They went into his house. They basically, the family felt terrorized based on what happened. Did you know about that? That they went into his house in the dead of night, and they showed pictures of, and they tried to indict them and indict me for our voter fraud work here in the state of New Hampshire, showing ballots being offered out in the names of the dead. Why did the state of New Hampshire use that recourse? Why did they try to indict me for doing investigative reporting?
So a slightly loaded question in terms of the way it was phrased. I would not describe the effort by the investigator to locate you during the course of an investigation regarding some work that you had done in the state of New Hampshire in the way that you characterized it. So taking that aside, I am aware that an investigator, in an effort to locate you, did talk to family members.
Was there a criminal grand jury subpoena present with that investigator when he went to Mike Rogers' house in May of 2012?
That I'm not commenting on in terms of anything relating to grand jury work.
Criminal grand jury subpoena that was present in the hands of Murdoch, the investigator who went to Mike Rogers' house in May of 2012. You don't know about that, or you have no comment?
Simply not commenting on it.
All right, that was James O'Keefe of Project Veritas, a citizen journalist who has garnered a lot of attention. He's the one whose videos have brought down Acorn, although only maybe to be revived by Obamacare, unfortunately. And he's out with a brand new book called Breakthrough, Our Guerrilla War to Expose Fraud and Save Democracy. And he did more than just go after Acorn. You know, his work led to its defunding by Congress, but also the contemptuous biases at NPR of the NPR executives, which led to the resignation of two of their top officials, as well as a vote to freeze funding by the U.S. House of Representatives. He also showed the callous indifference of New Jersey Education Association officials to taxpayers and students, and also revealed the easy tolerance of fraud at Planned Parenthood, Medicaid, HUD, that's the Housing and Urban Development, as well as other government agencies. And then yesterday, James O'Keefe came out with a new series of videos from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, showing a bunch of wireless phone company workers at a place called Stand Up Wireless and asking them about getting his free Obama phone and who's eligible for it. And, you know, what if I wanted to sell this phone for heroin? And the guy says, I'm not going to judge you. And then he went to another tent that was set up giving away these Obama phones and then asking them again, you know, can we, you know, what about selling these for drugs? And they were like, oh, well, nothing says you can't. I mean, really, it was incredible stuff. And this is leading to more exposure of corruption and just how many billions and billions and billions of dollars that you, the taxpayer, anybody who has a phone, landline, wireless, or otherwise, who pays into that Federal Universal Service Fund, which is funding the Obama phone program, because after all, it is your right to have a phone. As some companies call it, lifeline assistance. You know, like Assurance Wireless, who sent me a mailing. You know, you can get a free phone, courtesy of the federal government. Isn't that nice? Oh, by the way, that came in the mail within a month before the November election. Oh, really? And remember that lady from, I think it was it Cincinnati? It was Cleveland, Ohio. Oh, yes, the Obama phone lady. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, watch out, folks. You know, James O'Keefe is on the run again. That's right.
Obama. You got Obama phone?
Yes, everybody in Cleveland, low minority, got Obama phone. Keep Obama in president, you know? He gave us a phone.
He gave you a phone?
He's gonna do more.
How'd he give you a phone?
You sign up if you on food stamps, you on Social Security, you got low income, you disability.
Hey, I have a question. Okay, what's wrong with Romney again?
Romney, he sucks. Hey!
yeah. So Project Veritas has a lot more on that. with what happened in Philadelphia. But in James O'Keefe's new book, and James O'Keefe's scheduled to join us at this time, but we're unable to get a hold of him, unfortunately. And we'll try to reschedule him. I have a good relationship with his publicist. James O'Keefe actually does a piece about what happened to him here in New Hampshire just a year ago when he was going to come to speak in New Hampshire. And then somebody, you know, decided to target him, and he ended up not coming to New Hampshire. And basically, if he stepped foot in New Hampshire, he was going to be arrested and so on. So he did a very short chapter called The Rise of Richard Head, which talks about the Associate Attorney General. And give him credit, you know, he did come out to speak to James O'Keefe very recently, and you know, in an unscheduled visit. So apparently James O'Keefe not facing any problems here in New Hampshire anymore. But it just goes to show you the heavy-handedness of the government when somebody exposes fraud and corruption, as was the case here in New Hampshire with voter fraud. But we're told, no, there's no voter fraud. Then tell me why one of the Project Veritas correspondents in Washington, D.C., went in, a white man, went in, posed as U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, who says, Eric Holder of such and such a street. And the lady says, yeah, I'd like to give you your ballot. Well, gee, don't you want me to show you ID first? Oh, no, we're not going to give you ID. Here, let me give you the ballot. No, I really don't want a ballot. I want to get your ID. And I'll get it as fast. I'll get it before you can even say fast and furious. And then he left. So really amazing. Really amazing stuff here. So I hope that we can reconnect with James O'Keefe in the very near future, because his book just rolled out yesterday, as a matter of fact. He was on Bill O'Reilly last night. I didn't see it, but you know, his new book just coming out yesterday called Breakthrough, and we'll get you more information on that. Bulldog Live continues here at 1-866-823-1077. Northern Pass is making its move. We'll tell you about it next here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse.
This is not just about the North. This is not, as somebody said to me at a meeting I was at in Manchester, isn't that a snowmobile trail? No. This is about the whole state. It is impacting 3,000 acres of the White Mountain National Forest. It is going to be highly visible from 6 points on the Appalachian Trail to any hiker on the AT. It affects 2 state parks, Pawtuckaway and Bear Brook. It also affects the heart of tourism travel, Route 93. It crisscrosses, as you know, more than 6 times, and there will be 8 additional places where it's not crossing, but where you get a really good view of that right of way where that is going to come down. So again, this is also not about just going past. It is going to be repeatedly in the face of anybody who's choosing to drive up Route 93 or a hiker or other recreationist out in the White Mountain National Forest on the Appalachian Trail. So, again, not just north and not just passing.
That's Susan Arnold from the Appalachian Mountain Club speaking in Easton on June 9th, and Bulldog Live was there for that as well, and talking about the proposed Northern Pass project, which has really hit a number of roadblocks, but now we're seeing the true intentions of Northern Pass now, and what has been speculated for weeks and many months, actually, and you know that a big portion of the meeting in Easton of the opposition to Northern Pass focused a lot on the Connecticut Headwaters easement, and we've talked with the folks from the Forest Society. They had their law firm write a legal memorandum about why Northern Pass cannot use the Connecticut Headwaters track, and talked about Senator Gene Shaheen and Judd Gregg putting their letter in the Concord Monitor the other week as well, about the need to protect the Connecticut Headwaters against Northern Pass. And we've asked Governor Hassan on this show if the state had received any application or any discussions with Northern Pass about using the Connecticut Headwaters track. Well, as Anne-Marie Timmons writes in today's Concord Monitor, it appears that Northern Pass has tipped their hand. Faced with a block in their route, Northern Pass officials have asked the state about crossing the protected Connecticut Lakes headwaters, but doing it underground, the state attorney general's office said yesterday, confirming what elected officials and environmental advocates have predicted for weeks. The 146,000-acre property was conserved in 2003 under the bipartisan efforts of Senator Gene Shaheen, and who was then governor, and former U.S. Senator Judd Gregg. Suspecting Northern Pass was eyeing the land to solve a root problem, Shaheen and Gregg issued a joint statement earlier this month saying the headwaters land should be off limits to the project. And last month, the Society for Protection, we already told you all this. So anyway, here's what's going on, folks. Now Northern Pass has talked to the state. They've had a meeting and they want to talk about going across the land, possibly underground. Now, this is interesting. Because if you look at the legal memorandum that Ransmeyer Spellman Law Firm had written up, they can't do that either. But Northern Pass is going to try it anyway. Now, you would think, with all the discussions that have been had recently, even by some of our highest level government officials, that Northern Pass would abandon this idea. But you know what? They did it themselves. They bought themselves into a $40 million box there in Stewartstown on land that they know that they can't cross, or maybe the land agents working for them buying up those properties didn't do their homework to see about, you know, whether they could go through there or not. But as Jack Savage of the Forest Society said, it's actually ironic that you know, they're talking about undergrounding it when it suits their purposes, right? Oh, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's great. Savage is quoted in this article in the Monitor, who, when told of Northern Pass's meeting with the state, he says, it's not the means, it's the use that's not allowed. That's like asking if I would be allowed to rob a bank if I used a squirt gun. Senator Shaheen has already responded, saying Senator Shaheen believes that the easement should be used to protect the Connecticut River headwaters from commercial or industrial development that is unrelated to the traditional uses of forestry and outdoor recreation, according to her spokeswoman, Elizabeth Kennisberg, who added, upholding our commitment to our state's special places was and continues to be what's in the best interest for New Hampshire. Now, as the story points out, the state has not received a formal request for Northern Pass to cross the conservation easement in Stewartstown, where the Connecticut headwaters separates nearly $40 million in other Northern Pass property purchased for its proposed hydropower line. But Northern Pass officials had two meetings with the Attorney General's office in late March and early April to discuss the possibility, said Ann Edwards, chief of staff. Those sons of guns are lying, because you know what they told me when I asked them the question if they had the meeting? They said no, there was no meeting here. The governor lied to my face, and these people lied to me when I inquired of them. They're all a bunch of damn liars, aren't they? They met back in March. Sorry, I don't like being lied to, as you can tell. Ann Edwards said, they came in, and folks, I think it's time to do a right-to-know request on this. What do you think? They came in, and they outlined what their process was for laying out lines and how they were going to do it. They had shown us a possibility of crossing the Connecticut Lakes headwaters. If they asked to cross there, they said they would be willing to cross underground. J-Dog, how red is my face right about now? Because I'm steaming mad. I missed this portion when I read the story earlier. Holy cow. Chief Wahoo red. Bastards. I'm just going to take a deep breath. Deep breath. Do I have to take a break? Am I due to take a break right now? How many breaks do I have left? One? Good. I can go on for a couple more minutes. Edwards said her office did not discuss the possibility of Northern Pass paying for access to the land. Well, that's not her office's responsibility to do so. It's not in their purview, is it? And she declined to say whether her office had formed an opinion on whether the 44-page easement deed allowed for such a use. She said her office would do a full legal analysis if it received a formal application to use the land. Oh, yes. Waste more time. Edwards said any application would have to come from the land's owner, the Forest Land Group, based in North Carolina, and go to the State Department of Resources and Economic Development, which holds the easement for the state. Commissioner Jeff Rose of Dredd did not return a call or email yesterday, and don't hold your breath on him either. But Edwards said she does not believe an application has been submitted. And, you know, the Concord Monitor tried to call the Forest Land Group, which manages the timber investment on the property, and that was not recalled, or the call was not returned. Now, despite the fact that Governor Hassan lied to my face, I'm still going to share for you a favorable quote in her reaction to this. Because when asked about Northern Pass's interest in the easement property, Governor Maggie Hassan's spokesman, Mark Goldberg, said protecting the conservation easement is a top priority. In recent months, our office has met with many stakeholders as potentially impacted by Northern Pass as possible, including North Country community leaders, the conservation community, and families and landowners, as well as Northern Pass officials and proponents. The governor fully understands that protecting the North Country's beautiful vistas and natural resources is an important part of maintaining New Hampshire's high quality of life and for keeping our tourism-driven economy strong. The state has a responsibility to uphold the terms of the Connecticut Lakes Headwaters conservation easement, and the governor takes that responsibility very seriously, end quote. Well, good for her. But when she said that no agency, and I'll go back and listen to the audio, it's actually posted on my Northern Pass page at briantilton.com. And I'm going to go back, I'm going to listen very carefully to the words that she said. Because I'm going back and thinking about the question that I asked. Has any agency had any conversations? An agency would include the New Hampshire Attorney General's office. Have they had any discussions with Northern Pass about using the Connecticut Lakes Headwater region? And I was told no. And so were other people that have asked. And here, Anne-Marie Timmons is reporting that they met back in late March and early April to discuss the possibility. Bulldog Live continues on The Pulse. So I'm trying to figure out, what can we do about liars who hold office? Kelly Ayotte, Marco Rubio, Maggie Hassan, and then these other idiots in the Obama administration who are lying before Congress. And I'm talking about Attorney General Eric Holder, the former head of the IRS. And then we had yesterday, the head of the National Security Agency was asked a question. Do you have... you have access to the records that were stored on Americans through your snooping spy. Well, we don't have illegal access to it. No, the question was actually, do you have the ability to get into it? Not do you have access? Do you have legal ability? I mean, do you have the ability to? You know, and those are two different things. You know, so the guy never answered the question, and we're told that, you know. Oh, this spying on Americans, which we're not really spying on Americans, only if American citizens are, engaging in conversations with terrorists overseas. You know, it makes you wonder, first of all, then why is there a court order that mandates that Verizon turn over every single one of the phone records every single day. Why? Why? If they're not, you know, spying on Americans, then how come? Well, and Robert Romano pointed this out the other day at netrightdaily.com. Did the NSA chief admit the agency is recording everything? Now, if we didn't collect that ahead of time, we couldn't make these connections. So what we create is a set of data, and we put it out here, and then only under specific times, we query that data. End quote. That was National Security Agency head Keith Alexander in testimony to the Senate Appropriations Committee on June 12th, admitting that phone metadata on everybody is in fact being collected in real time. You got that? Yeah, in real time, folks. On everybody. Now, here's the other interesting thing. You know, so why is the agency collecting the information? That's number one. And number two, he said that, well, we can't get that information unless we get a search warrant. Well, President Obama told us that they're not listening in on our phone calls, that they're not recording our phone calls. Then tell me why they're able to go back to a search warrant for the content of those calls if they're not recording anything. Very interesting, isn't it? Liars, liars, liars everywhere. Huh. Second hour of Bulldog Live next.